Well, if you've been with us during this, I don't know, last 6 or 8 weeks, we've been looking at, let me just back up. Joey did a sermon some time ago, and then the elders asked him to, out of that sermon, make a series, a study of the times that Jesus had to scold, if I can use that word, the apostles. It's one thing when he scolded the Pharisees who were always trying to trick him and trap him and say things to him to get him to say something or do something. So, I mean, I guess it's somewhat natural for us to expect him to admonish them or scold them. But it is interesting when he scolds the very people who are following him. And as Joy pointed out, that should make us set up and take notice of what he has to say, because if we too are following him, we don't want to make those same mistakes that his apostles. And if the apostles made these mistakes, then it's really of note, I think, that we should take note of. This morning we're going to be in the 26th chapter of Matthew, and while you turn there, it seems like this is the story basically of Jesus in the garden praying before he has to go be crucified. And he asked the disciples, which are the 11, because Judas is now off doing his dirty deed, or he's gone off to get or make that, arrange that dirty deed. And the overarching lesson is going to be two words: watch and pray. And it seems pretty simple that, well, why would that be such a big deal? But hopefully we can answer that through the course of this study. I want to look at that word for just a little bit. The word watch, and I don't mean to insult anybody's intelligence when I do this. I just kind of, I do it for myself, then I just share it. So if anybody feels like I'm insulting their intelligence, I don't mean to do that at all. I know you know what the word means, but still, I just think it's interesting to remind ourselves of its definition. To watch means to be on the lookout, be on alert, pay attention, be careful, be on guard, take heed. Then there's the kind of watch like the sailor had at the midnight watch, or the guard, the patrol, the scout. It's a period of time for being on guard. Keep aware, be vigilant, spiritually alert. Now, this isn't the first time that Jesus has taught on this, and this is kind of an interesting thing, too, because the disciples have heard him teach on watching, so you don't need to turn there, just listen to this, and I can see where they might have been maybe a little confused based upon his previous teachings. So I'm just going to go through those. You just listen. You can turn to me if you want to. Matthew 24:42. Jesus says, "Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good men of the house had known in what watch," now this is like what the period of time that this person would have been on guard. Let me back up and say that. "But know this, that if the good men of the house had known in what period of time or night watch or whatever way you want to call that, the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." Then during the parable of the 10 virgins, he ends that, Matthew 25:13, with that same warning: "Watch therefore, for you know not neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." Mark 13:33, "Take heed, watch and pray." See, here's our two words grouped together: watch and pray. "For you know not when that time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work and commanded the porter to watch. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh, at even or at midnight or at the cock crowing or in the morning, lest coming suddenly find you sleeping. And I say unto you, that I say unto all, watch. Luke, the 12th chapter, verse 36. And ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord, when he will return from the wedding, and when he cometh and knocketh, he may open immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he come, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, he shall gird himself, and make him sit down and meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch or period of time that there should be somebody on guard, or come in the third watch and find them, so blessed are those servants. Luke 21, 36, watch ye therefore and pray always and be accounted. This is when he had just talked about the destruction of Jerusalem. And so he says, watch therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. What I'm trying to point out here is these teachings that Jesus does has to do with watching for his second coming, predominantly. So what he's going to tell them here in the garden to watch and pray, we're going to get to that in just a second. But now I want to go over listen how the apostles use the word watch. After Jesus has died and risen, he spent 40 days with him, and now he's ascended. He's gone back into heaven. The church has started. Now listen to what, in the 20th chapter of the book of Acts, when Paul's talking to the Ephesian elders, he says, therefore watch and remember. By the space of 3 years, I cease not to warn everyone night and day in tears. 1 Corinthians 16, 13, watch ye. Stand fast in faith. Quit you like men. Be strong. Colossians 4, 2. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. 1 Thessalonians 5 and 6. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. 2 Timothy 4, 5. Watch thou in all things. Endure affliction. Do the work of evangelists. Make full proof of your ministry. 1 Peter 4, 7. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And then Revelation 3, which we're going through on Wednesday night, the 3rd chapter, verse 3. Remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief and shall know not. And thou shalt not know what hour I come upon thee. So here we go. Jesus returns to talking about you don't know when his second coming is going to come. But the apostles are using the word more like Jesus uses it in what we're about to study. Because he says, watch and pray. They're not watching for his second coming. They're in the garden. He hadn't even died yet. So we're going to go through this. And you're smart enough, I think you'll be able to figure that out. The text will tell us. So if you're in the 26th chapter of Matthew, I want to give you a little bit of background. So he sets up the Passover is at hand. And so Judas agrees that he's going to betray Christ. They prepare for the Passover. This is in the earlier part of the chapter 26. And now they're celebrating the Passover. And this is when Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. And he tells them, they're going to deny me. He tells Peter, and Peter makes it so, well, I'll never do that. This is important because I think we're going to see this play out here. The Gospel of John doesn't record this. The Gospel of John does not record this Jesus in the garden with the apostles. But he does record what the other apostles or what the other writers, the Gospels, does not. Chapters 13, 14, 15, well, actually 14, 15, and 16 of John is this long discussion that Jesus has with the apostles. Tell them he's going to lead the comfort, or the comforter's going to come and to replace him. Judas is gone. He's out doing his dirty deed. So there's the 11 that he's telling this to. And then in chapter, 18:1 of John, he starts out after these things. Let me get over there real quick. I don't want to misspeak, but I think that's where it starts. Yeah, because the 17th chapter of John is really the Lord's Prayer when he prays for the apostle. So verse 1 of chapter 18 of John, when Jesus had spoken these words, then he goes with his disciples to the brook of Kidron. So John picks up right there, skips over this, what we're about to study, Jesus in the garden with the disciples. He just goes right to the arrest of Jesus. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record this incident in the garden. So let's just pick up there. I'm going to actually pick up at verse 30. Our text is really 36 through 46, but I think this denial that Jesus predicts about Peter is important. Now, verse 30, just consider this. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Just right there, right off the bat, Jesus knows what's coming. And in spite of that, he still praises the Lord by singing a hymn, which is, that verse in and of itself is astonishing. He knows what's coming, but he still takes the time to sing a hymn. And Jesus said unto them all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, though all men should be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crows, thou shalt deny me thrice. Excuse me. And Peter said unto him, though I should die with thee, yet I will not deny thee. Likewise also said all the disciples. So now we get to our story. John starts that off after that long conversation he's had with him, after setting up the Lord's Supper. John just goes right in and after these things, and he goes right to the arrest. But the other Gospels share this story. In other words, we'll take it from Matthew. Then come Jesus unto this place called Gethsemane. And by the way, that just means olive presses. So they're at the Mount of Olives, and I guess at the base of that, they at one time had olive presses, and now it's a garden. And apparently this is a place that Jesus would visit somewhat frequently when he was there at the various festivals that all the Jewish men were required to be there. It was a place he seemed to resort to. I guess it was a quiet place. So he says unto the disciples, sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. I believe he's saying that to the 11, because verse 37 says he takes with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, which of course is James and John, which Mark tells us that, to be sorrowful and very heavy. And he said unto them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. This isn't the same kind of a sermon when he was telling him, you need to be watching for my second coming. Well, what's he mean by it? Well, hopefully the text will go ahead to tell us. You need to say, are they supposed to be watching for the mob that's going to soon be coming? Jesus knows that, but they don't know that. He's saying, watch. Go back to some of my definitions or some of those synonyms. You be on guard. For what? The mob? You be on guard for yourself. He goes a little further, verse 39, falls down on his face, prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but as thou wilt. So he comes back, verse 40, unto the disciples and finds them asleep. And says unto Peter, What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? I think 41, verse 41, is the key to what he's wanting them to watch. Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. There's the answer. Be on guard against temptation and pray that if and when that temptation comes, you'll be strong enough to withstand it. Peter's already bragged that I'll never do that. I'll never forsake you. Jesus saying, you better be on guard, son. And you better be seeking God's assistance like I'm doing right now. Jesus is off praying. You guys sit here. You be on guard for yourselves and pray. I'm going to go over here and pray and seek heavenly strength. You really ought to be doing the same thing. But what happens? Falls asleep. We'll see if I can say this the right way. Watching is to sleep what fasting is to eating. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's ever driven across Kansas. When the kids were young, we were going to go out there and go skiing. You drive across Kansas, you're doing everything you can to stay awake. Stopping to get an extra cup of coffee, keeping the windows down, chewing gum, doing whatever you can to try to stay awake. Because it's important. You don't want to fall asleep at the wheel and kill everybody. It's important. So watching is to sleep what fasting is to eating. You'll remember this. Jesus says, Matthew 16:24, he also says it in Mark and Luke. Then said Jesus unto the disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So denying yourself of eating when you want to, that's called fasting. Denying yourself of sleep when you should be on the alert, that's called watching. But they didn't do that. They fell asleep. And Jesus says, you couldn't even watch for an hour? Now, the Jews divided the night into three watches, three four-hour shifts. The Romans divided into 4 3-hour shifts. And we got nurses here that's worked 12-hour shifts. And I'm sure you're probably pretty hard, I'm guessing, to fight that sleep when you got patients you got to take care of. Thank goodness you only got to do it 3 days a week before you get a break from that. That's a long, long, long day. But it is a discipline. Fasting is a discipline. Watching is a discipline. Say that one more time about what Jesus said. If any man is going to come after me, let him deny himself, whether that's food or a little sleep or a little pleasure. I think I need a nap this afternoon, which is common for me to do on Sundays. But I don't know that the apostles really knew just how stressed Jesus was. He just had this long conversation with them after setting up the Lord's Supper. Now he goes out here because he knows what's coming. I don't really know if the apostles really knew what was coming. But they fall asleep. So he goes again the second time, verse 42. Again, ask God, my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples and said unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. And then this almost sounds like a contradiction. Verse 46, rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. So here comes Judas now with the temple police. They're ready. They got their staves. They're ready to take him. And that's where John picks up. John doesn't record this. It's in the garden. He just picks up and goes right into the arrest of Jesus. But as Joy pointed out, when Jesus chides his followers, and if we're going to consider ourselves his followers, we maybe ought to sit up and take notice of what he's saying. You need to be on guard. Well, what's Peter say? Somebody could probably quote it. I'll do that real quick. Can anybody quote 1 Peter 5:8? I took you by surprise. What's that? Thank you. Thank you. Can you quote it? Or anybody read it? I can read it, but anybody got it handy? 1 Peter 5 and 8? Because listen to the... This is part of our synonyms to the word watch. Be sober. Be vigilant. That's a synonym, according to Webster's. Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. That's what Jesus is scolding his apostles for. It's not because he's not scolding them for being sleepy. Everybody needs a little sleep. Jesus was in all ways tempted like you and me, and yet without sin. Jesus slept, I'm sure. He didn't go his whole life without any sleep. But it is a discipline, and any of these nurses can tell you it's a discipline. You got to build up to that. The marathon runner doesn't just start off running 36 miles or whatever it is. They got to build up to that. It's a discipline. Or lifting weights or any of that kind of exercise stuff. You got to work at it to the point that you can stay up for 12 hours on your shift and make sure all the patients get the care they need. And thank God we got those kind of people that can do that, that have develop that discipline to the point that they can do it. That's what Jesus, I believe, and this is scolding his apostles for. It's because it is essential. If you're going to follow me, Let him deny himself of whatever pleasures or a little bit of sleep or a little bit of food or whatever that you need at any given point or you think you need when there's serious things at hand. I'm going to open it up for questions or comments. If you got questions, I'll do my best, but comments are more welcome because I don't have to answer them. Anybody? Alan.
I was thinking about the thought where Jesus loved his people. He loved his children in the faith, which would be his disciples here, his apostles. And then I was thinking about Hebrews chapter 12. I would like to read a couple of verses. Well, we'll start with verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortations which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom the father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons.
That's an outstanding thing. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Jesus chastened or spoke to his disciples here because he loved them.
A hearty amen to that. I absolutely agree with that. When Joey gave this lesson some time ago, I agree. He talks to them differently. It's still a little bit of a chastening or a rebuke or whatever you want to call it, scolding. But it wasn't because, like the Pharisees, they were trying to trick him or trap him. He's scolding it because he loves them and says, this is important stuff. In fact, as you know the story, he goes on, he's out there. And the book of Luke is the only one that records this, that an angel had to come and strengthen him. That's where it talks about he began to sweat as drops of blood. Well, I think that's part of the reason, too. He wanted the disciples there. He needed their help, but a lot of help they were sleeping. God sent an angel to strengthen him because he was so stressed of what was about to happen. Peter.
I don't think, like you mentioned, I don't think the disciples knew what was going on. When they say earlier, even if we have to die with you, we won't deny you, I think they had in their mind that there was going to be some grand physical battle because they still thought there was going to be an earthly kingdom. So they were waiting for that grand and glorious moment to have an opportunity to not deny Jesus. That's what they were expecting. They had no idea that they were going to go through all these things that were coming. And I think there's an analogy here for us, because sometimes we wait for that grand moment to serve God in the big ways, and we forget that the most important thing is to just do the little things every day. And maybe a big thing will come up, and maybe a big thing won't come up. But it's really what we do in the moment that counts. And we can see here that they didn't understand how important that was, and it cost them later. But we do the same sort of thing.
That's an outstanding comment. I'm glad you made it. Another thing that is maybe worth considering too, right after this comes, and you can now turn over to the book of John, because like I said, John skips this and goes right into the arrest, and which is kind of an interesting thing. I'm not sure. Maybe Well, the Holy Spirit had everything to do with it. I don't want to minimize that at all. But so they come to arrest Jesus, and what does Peter do down there? Where's it? I'm looking for it. I think it's verse 11. No. I've got to back up. Maybe it's... Okay, what I'm looking for is where Peter cuts off the guy's ear. Help me out. Verse 10, okay. And then what does Jesus tell him? Read that, somebody. Whoever's got it. Who's got that handy?
Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?
Well, okay, now read that last part again, now with my microphone.
Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?
Now, hold on. Shall I not drink the cup? Isn't that what he was just praying to pass from him? Didn't Jesus get on Peter back in Matthew 16? Get thee behind me, Satan, because he didn't want Jesus to die. And now Peter, as you say, Peter, he's waiting for some big event. So boy, he whips out his sword. He's ready to fight. Cuts the guy's ear off. And then Jesus says, hey, shall I not drink the cup that's been assigned to me? Well, isn't that what he was just praying to pass from him? All my life, that's the way I've read that. But here's an alternative view that I'm not saying it's one or the other. In fact, I kind of lean towards it's both. For lack of a better way of saying it, Jesus' humanity, I don't know if it was rising. I think he was human all the time. But he was never to allow, it was his duty, I guess, to say it this way, to never exercise his divinity to interfere with what his job was. His job was to come here and be crucified. He even says, you don't think I could call 12 legions of angels? So he knew he was going to have to drink this cup. So maybe as the cup that he was going through was this agonizing stress that he's going through. I don't know that he knew. Well, this is going to be a little embarrassing. I never will know what it's like to have a baby, but it's one thing to expect a baby for 9 months. Different thing to have it. I guess I'm getting a lot of, because you can be expecting it, but when it happens and everything starts happening, it's a big deal. And I think that's kind of where Jesus is at. If that's a bizarre comparison to make, but I don't know how else to do it. He's expected this. He's known about it from the beginning of time, from before the foundations of the world. He's lived here for 33 and a half years, something like that. And now he's on the cusp of it actually happening. Maybe, again, ladies, I apologize. Maybe it's like the water broke and it's here. I don't think the apostles knew that. They're sleeping. He is so stressed, he's sweating like blood, to where an angel has to come and strengthen him. Dano.
He did pray for that cup to pass from, and the Father said no.
Right.
But he did pray to not to do that.
He said if there was any other way.
Yeah.
But didn't he know there was no other way?
He knew it.
And so I'm thinking maybe partly this cup of agonizing over this. Because I, perhaps being human, being tempted in all ways like as you and me, yet without sin, he wasn't even spared the stress because he couldn't be tempted in all ways like you and me if he had never been tempted with that kind of stress. Gerald has a comment. And well, go ahead. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, right there where he asked for the cup to pass, he says, "Nevertheless, your will be done, not mine."
Right.
Jerry, I think we see the example then of what we can do. Jesus modeled it for us here. When we're in times of anxieties, times of stress, in the straits, so to speak, he went to the Father and he prayed for help. And it was given to him.
It was given to him.
And if we look at that passage you referred to in 1 Peter 5 again, I think there is the prescription for us. I don't know if you want to read that or not, but...
Well, yeah, I...
that's part of what you're going to.
I've got it. Well, 1 Peter 5 and 8. Be sober, be vigilant. Is that the one you're referring to?
Well, I think I'd even start in verse 6, maybe.
Well, if you have it, go ahead.
Okay.
Because I just had it written down. I only had verse 8.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To him be the dominion forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you, Gerald. Which speaks to what Peter was saying earlier. We don't have to wait for some big battle or some big great deed. Every day, there's probably, not probably, I'm confident that we all just miss all kinds of opportunities because we're looking for some big thing, yet all around us, and all Jesus really asked them to do in this specific incident, watch and pray.